The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Greatest you ever did in his prime. You need him to get by. Still Patrick Mahomes, the best I've ever seen, and Aaron Rodgers having one of his greatest seasons. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Raj, if I just said join me on the Goodyear Hotline, that would be ridiculous. This is COVID days, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm in New York, and my producer Raj is in L.A. And Alabama just won its sixth national title in a dozen years. They win the championship of college football on average once every other year. Just when it looked like, look, I know Urban Meyer and this one and that one. Look, bottom line is Dabo Swinney was the guy. And Clemson was the program that over the last half decade made it seem like the Nick Saban era is over. The Alabama's era is over. Maybe it's a new era where they're like co-captains, right? But they ain't heads and shoulders above everyone else anymore because of Clemson. Oh, they're head and shoulders over everyone, all right. Just like that. Just like that. Like this. Hear that? That's me snapping into a microphone. Just like that. Alabama's champion again. And they went bell to bell. They went wire to wire. A lot of talk. People were arguing on First Take about asterisks. You know what's interesting about this year? 2020 and the championships of the 2020 season now into 2021. What happened? Who won? Because the Lakers were favored by the public to win the championship. And wire to wire, they were the best team in the NBA. No one took them seven games, and they won the championship. Alabama was favored. And wire to wire, they were the best team in college football, destroyed the SEC, had a very tough schedule, beat the hell out of everyone, and got crowned national champions in a rout. The Los Angeles Dodgers, who've been knocking on the championship door for years now, got even better, had an enormous budget, a huge market team, playing with analytics, playing money ball with money, and were heavily favored to win. And they did. They won the World Series. I don't know. I mean, I know this was a very trying year, but in sports, there's no asterisk championships here. The teams, the traditional powerhouses, who were also supposed to win this year, did just that. There's no surprising outcomes. Dodgers, Lakers, Alabama, it's chalk. Chalk. Nick Saban, meantime, seven national titles, six with Alabama. Passes Paul Bear Bryant on the all-time list. And you win the national championship game over Ohio State. Justin Fields of Ohio State had just put it on Clemson the previous week. Threw six touchdown passes. Over 400 yards of offense from Justin Fields. Alabama whipped them 52-24. That's some coach in there. And by the way, I know college coaching is much to do about recruiting. Okay, that's part of the job description. Well, Nick, if someone else had all the, Urban Meyer had all that talent, or Dabo Swinney had all that talent, then yeah, sure, of course, yeah. Nick Saban's better at recruiting too, yes. Nick Saban, what do you think, coach? Congratulations on your championship, and what do you think about this strange COVID season?
I told this team in the very beginning when we knew we were going to have a lot of disruptions that the team that handles the disruptions the best is the team that's going to have the best chance to be successful in the end. And this team really did it. And if you talk to the players, they actually say that a lot of the disruptions and a lot of the things that we weren't able to do, whether it was spring practice or summer conditioning or whatever it was, actually made the team closer. And we became a better team because of some of the disruptions, which I was actually surprised to hear. But certainly they demonstrate that in the way they compete and play.
Adversity can absolutely be a bonding experience. You can see this in boxing, like two championship fighters in a vicious, brutal fight. It's a grudge match. But at the end of the fight, they hug it out. Because you not only go through it against someone, you go through it with them. Right? And this the adversity can do that. It can bring teams closer together. It can destroy teams too. But if the team has character and leadership, it can bring them closer together. That's what happened with Alabama. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, is presented by Progressive Insurance. Make it easy to bundle your home and car insurance.
Aaron Rodgers, to me, is the MVP this season.
It's the best season he's ever had.
Idle chatter like that doesn't have a space in my brain.
Jared Goff is the most important player in the NFC playoffs.
This would be an incredibly difficult challenge for Green Bay.
The thing about Jared Goff, and the thing about Sam Darnold, and the thing about a lot of quarterbacks, not that Goff is Darnold, he's better, but the thing about quarterbacks, like, I still don't know. If enough years go by and you still don't know, you know. Well, what about Ryan Tannehill? Yes, there are exceptions. But I wouldn't take that. I wouldn't take those exceptions to the bank. I wouldn't bet on them. I would bet that if you don't know, you know. Like, for example, after 4 or 5 years, did you know about Aaron Rodgers? They gave Brett Favre the boot, gave Aaron Rodgers the ball, and half decade into Aaron Rodgers' career, and he had to wait a while. He had to hold that clipboard for a while. There was no, like, I wonder if this Aaron Rodgers guy is going to pan out. No, you knew about Rodgers. Goff is what he is. He is a solid average starting quarterback, maybe a tick above average. He has the ability to play very well, especially if you use play action. He is not a superstar quarterback. But who? Aaron Rodgers sure is. Aaron Rodgers. You know, I believe Mahomes is the best I've ever seen, but he replaced Aaron Rodgers on my list. And I can't really prove it with Mahomes. In other words, anything Mahomes can do, Rodgers can do also. He can make all the same plays, all the same throws. If I have to choose one, I take Mahomes because he looks a little bigger and stronger, and he has that same kind of laser beam passing ability. He can diagnose plays quickly. He can make adjustments on the fly. He can do all those things, and he does it with a certain kind of like gunslinger thing that is infectious for the team, I believe. He does it with – he's Brett Favre, and Aaron Rodgers had a baby. But, like, Rodgers is – you can't really point to something that Mahomes does and say Rodgers can't do that. Those two guys can do physically things on the field no one else who ever lived can do consistently like them. And Rodgers on a very good Packers team. They're peaking at the right time. The defense has come together. He has offensive weapons. Not like Mahomes, but he's got weapons. Devontae Adams is no joke. But, whoa, he's got a – and for a guy with a bye in the first round, and who doesn't have to go to New Orleans if it gets that far, they'll have to go to the frozen tundra. Boy, they have some rough sledding to get to a Super Bowl. To do that, Aaron Rodgers will have to beat a Rams defense that is as talented as any defense in the league and playing well, and then potentially a Bucs or Saints team, and then potentially a Chiefs team in the Super Bowl. For a team with a first-round bye, boy, that's some rough sledding. Meantime, Dan Orlovsky on Get Up this morning. I was watching it with, you know, drinking my coffee, watching Get Up. And Dan Orlovsky came in and did a lot of brilliant stuff on the air today. Broke down Mac Jones tape, broke down Justin Fields tape. But for the purposes of this conversation, had some really interesting analysis on the Rams' chances to beat the Packers. And so now, it's time for Making Moves with ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
Dan, before I dish out some more punishment for you on the Eagles, I want you to tell me what kind of obstacle the Rams are for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, it's the biggest challenge of Matt LaFleur's, you know, relatively young head coaching career for sure. Probably the biggest challenge for Aaron Rodgers as well that we've had in the past couple years. The Packers offense, it's really thrived on two things, create and confuse. And Matt LaFleur does a great job of creating really simple throws for their offense, you know, with pre-snap motion, at the snap motion that out-leverages the defense. Well, when you're playing against the Rams, they play with the best leverage out of any defense in the NFL. Guys are supposed to be outside to get outside. Guys are supposed to play underneath to get underneath. They have great communication. And then confusion, where again the everything looks the same in their play action or their bootleg game that it does in their run game, and again the at the snap motion to out kind of number a defense. Well, when you're playing a defense that communicates like the Rams, that's going to get minimized as well. And so the two things that have been strengths for the Packers offense is really counterintuitive to the strength of the Rams defense. And I just think that's a huge, huge challenge for Aaron Rodgers in that offense. And now you're also looking at a Rams offense that has become one of those NFL offenses that they can run the football when everybody in the stadium knows we're running the football. And we all know that we've talked about all year, going back to the NFC title game last year, that's the weakness of Green Bay, is can you stop the run? And we are going to find out. I said, Max, in the first week of December, the Rams were the one team that Green Bay did not want to see. And I still feel that way, and it's a huge challenge for them.
That, I mean, you were on fire this morning with this analysis. And if you haven't seen it, go, I bet you it's on YouTube somewhere. Go look up Dan's breakdown of the quarterback play in the national championship game. It really is brilliant, showing Mac Jones's subtle skill and Justin Fields' also subtle skill, not to mention the obvious talent. But the Rams stuff really caught my attention because the Rams are one of those teams, Dan. Man, if I look at the Packers and I think, well, you had a bye in the first round. You have home field, so you don't have to go to New Orleans. But for a team in that position, they have a brutal task ahead of them to win a Super Bowl. The Rams are your first team playing the way they're playing. You brought up they can run it even, you know, when they know, like, they're going to run it. One of the most unsung heroes on this Rams entire, like, not dynasty, but run of excellence in the last several years is Whitworth, the left tackle.
Yep.
And Whitworth was not pulled due to injury last game. They're just resting him. And when he goes down, they're not nearly as good. When Whitworth is anchoring that offensive line, the Rams, Dan, look to me to be an elite team.
There's no question about it, Max. And the thing that was really interesting watching that Seattle game was about midway through the game, Sean McVay said, you know what? Screw this. I'm not doing this run game that we've done here recently. And they went back to their old school outside zone run game, which Whitworth excels at, again, and just pushing people off the line. And that actually helped Jared Goff a ton, because it got back to some of that play action pass, the bootlegs that you see all these crossers on. And I'm really interested to see, is Sean McVay going to take that into the next week? Because if they take that to Green Bay and Jared's starting to get some of those chunk throws that we remember from 2018, if they get that back with the Cam Akers run game and the defense, and you know what's another great thing about this game, Max? What was the last time we saw a Jalen Ramsey, Davante Adams type of matchup in the NFL?
Jalen Ramsey's this, so good. Like,
It's Revis Moss all over again type feel.
This is why I tell people, like Jets fans, Devontae Smith, no. If you're Miami and you have draft capital, you didn't stink. You're just picking high up. Yeah, go grab the great wideout, right? But great wideouts are available all over the draft. All over the draft you can find a great wideout. But when you have upper end shut down corner ability, those guys usually ain't going in the third and fourth round. And you can see what the Rams have in Jalen Ramsey, why they made that deal. He has been, like, I hate to say it, he makes wideouts look bad one-on-one in this day and age. That's hard to do.
Yeah, and I remember when the trade happened, I was like, I don't know, guys. That's a lot for a corner in today's NFL where space is such a big deal and you got to cover four or five matchups. The way that he, I mean, literally, he is the corner that goes to the defensive coordinator. Brandon Staley is like, hey, man, I got this. You could take my side of the field, and we are good. And they do that. They will put Ramsey by himself and not on people's two. They're going to put him on Davante Adams.
On the one. Yep.
I am so excited to watch those two match off against
me
each other.
Me too. I got Jalen Ramsey's impressed me so much this year. I almost feel sorry for lead receivers, which, you know, the offensive player has the edge, but he's been amazing. Real quick before we move on to the Eagles, does Aaron Donald have to be healthy for them to win, Dan? I don't just mean on the field. Obviously he has to be on the field. But, like, how much of himself does he have to be for the Rams to win this game?
Yes, he does. Because what Aaron Donald does is, one, dominate, but two, allow others to be better than they are. Allow others to have the opportunity to dominate. You got to slide your protection. You got to win one-on-ones. That's why Leonard Floyd is playing so well. That's because they're putting Leonard Floyd on the opposite side of Aaron Donald, and Aaron Donald is rushing passers, and quarterbacks are moving away going, okay, I'm getting away from 99 and 54, Leonard Floyd sitting there like, hey, I'll take another sack, you know? And so if Aaron Donald, the presence, but also the impact isn't there, because this is what Green Bay is going to do early on. Green Bay is going to run some run game, whether they're these wham blocks or down blocks at those ribs. And they're going to find out where he's at. They're going to find out. That's what I would do. Okay, how healthy is he? Because if he's not that healthy, I feel a little bit better about soloing him up in pass protection sometimes. And that allows my other offensive linemen to help out on some of their pass rushers.
Bottom line is the Rams have a real chance to win this game against the NFC's best team. This is going to be something. Dan, Doug Peterson's out in Philly. And I don't have a problem with that. I think ultimately that's the decision I would have made too. Not that he's not an excellent coach, but not for this situation. But I'm shocked that that Howie Roseman is still there. He has been awful. And furthermore, I know you've already taken the L on this one, but I really think this was an issue of the owner, of Jeffrey Lurie, giving Carson Wentz way too much power in this organization. Like, Wentz is still there, and that's probably because they can't find a taker for that contract. But the coach is gone. And by the way, Peterson was supporting Wentz. He wanted to promote the quarterback's coach to OC to try to fix the Wentz situation. What is your take on Doug Peterson, who I think here is a fall guy, and like the fact that Roseman and Wentz are still there bothers me?
Yeah, I don't like it. Was it the right decision? I have no idea. But it was the necessary decision because of what the situation's become. Max, it's hard. It's hard to coach in the NFL, man. It is so hard to want to coach in the NFL and prove that you're good enough and handle all the rigors of coaching in the NFL in a city like Philly that is so demanding and the expectations are so high. This guy's got a statue outside of his stadium. And so, like, again, everyone listening more than likely knows where I stand on Wentz. I think Wentz is going to be a great player again. But
no, you don't still think that after this,
do
you? Come on.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, come on.
But here's the thing, Max. We can all sit here today and realize that this organization's got some stuff going on. They got some issues. It's hard to play. Deshaun Watson, what he did in the midst of absolute, a terrible situation in Houston is the unicorn, okay? That's the unicorn. Most times when your organization has issues like Philly has shown, that you play poorly at a quarterback spot. Now, let me say
he
this.
He is the issue, Dan. Wentz issue.
No.
He stubbornly refuses to run the offense for Peterson. That's the issue.
But do you know that? Okay, so the conversations that I've had, Max, is that there's one coach doing the run game, and then there's another coach doing the pass game for play action, and there's another coach doing the drop back. And so they all bring it to Doug Peterson, and then Doug just randomly calls plays, and Carson's like, wait, that's not what we talked about.
But you know what? I'd be with that, Dan. I'd be with that, except it worked for Nick Foles. It worked for Jalen Hurts. It worked for a 40-year-old quarterback in the playoffs as well as it worked for Carson Wentz, at least. You know, like
it worked for Nick Foles because there was a different coaching staff there then. Okay, so that's the bad example. And
they were 5-6 when he took over the second year.
But
when
but
Foles
took
over for
Wentz. Coaching staff. Again, different coaching staff. There's a different coaching staff there than there is this year. And the Jalen Hurts thing, like, listen, Jalen brought them a spark. Let's not pretend that Jalen played really good quarterback play either this year. Like, brought them a spark. But let me say this. There will be no player in the NFL under more pressure this year than Carson Wentz. It's actually the second time in the last 3 years that's the case.
That's true.
I mean, you won the power struggle. Your organization chose you. You have to go play fantastic football for this organization to look back and say it was worth it to move on from the coach.
You know, Dan, I am a Giants fan, so I'm very eagerly looking forward to next season. I hope they keep doing exactly what they're doing. I love it. The great Dan Orlovsky, ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. He's worth the price of admission on Get Up to watch him do breakdowns. And the price of admission is zero, by the way, so I suggest you spend that money. Dan Orlovsky, thank you very much. We will talk soon, my friend.
You're the man, Max. Thanks, bud.
That was Dan Orlovsky on the Goodyear Hotline. Lamar Jackson finally won the big game. How far can he take this Ravens team?
Max, the podcast.
You know what I figured out, and I didn't even figure it out, actually. Someone mentioned this to me, and I've only been listening to Wu-Tang since, what, 94 or earlier than that? Raj, why do you think they call it 36 Chambers? Why is it 36 Chambers? Does everyone know this? Am I the only idiot?
Well, I used to watch Kung Fu Theater on the Classica back here, but is it referenced one of those movies from the Kung Fu Theater?
I don't know what word. Are you trying to say the word theater?
Yeah.
Huh. And how, where do you put the R in theater?
Just leave my accent alone and answer the question.
No. This is interesting to me. All right, ready for this? Someone was like, why do they call it 36 Chambers? Is it because of this? And I was like, yep, it must be. How many dudes in Wu-Tang in the original Wu? 9 dudes, right? Okay.
Times.
Heartbeats. Times 4. 36. See what I'm saying?
Okay, never knew that.
All right, so there you go. Not yeah, heartbeats. Not heartbeats. Chambers.
Yeah, different chambers in the heart. See, kids, you learn something on the Max Kellerman show. Keep listening.
There are 36 chambers if you got 9 dudes. I think that's what it is. But why didn't I ever know? I don't ever like read hip hop magazines and stuff, so I don't know. Lamar finally won the big game. Okay, but how far can he take this Ravens team? Look, this is the thing about Lamar and Josh Allen right now. And don't listen. If someone's sitting there going, well, you know, quarterback play, it's not, shut up, nerds. Here's the bottom line. Whoever wins this game, that quarterback's going to be considered better. I'm right. Like, am I right or wrong? If the Baltimore Ravens win, when you see the lists of the best quarterbacks in the game next year, Lamar will be ahead of Josh Allen. If the Buffalo Bills win, Josh Allen will be ahead of Lamar Jackson. See how that works? Because fairly or unfairly, and I think it's a little fairer than people realize, great quarterbacks good quarterbacks on good teams will get judged by the one loss record. Now, look, you could see a great quarterback on an awful team. Deshaun Watson on the Texans. He's still great. Team's just no good. Like, we can see that, right? Or a bad quarterback on a good team. We can also identify that. But if you got a good team and a good quarterback, we will judge the quarterback by the success of the team. Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen both have excellent teams. Lamar Jackson has a dominant defense. He's missing a great receiver. Josh Allen has an excellent team. Whoever wins that game, that's going to be considered the better quarterback. And by the way, Lamar got the monkey off his back because the whole thing is, can he win in the playoffs? The answer is yes, he can win in the playoffs. But how many games can he win in a playoff series, right? What can he do in a playoff season? What can he do in a postseason? Can he actually win a Super Bowl or even challenge for one, given the fact that he's not a pocket passing first kind of quarterback? Josh Allen looks like Patrick Mahomes light. Oh, you can win a Super Bowl with that guy. But if Lamar Jackson wins one, he'll be the first guy to play like him that wins a Super Bowl. It's a big thing to do. I want to get some calls. Justin in Arizona, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, to your recent point, before I get to my question, I don't think Lamar Jackson is like Patrick Mahomes, because Patrick Mahomes throws it more than he runs.
No. I said Josh. Wait. I said Josh Allen is like Patrick Mahomes. He's not as good as Mahomes, but he's in that mold of quarterback. Whereas Lamar Jackson,
okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, is something different.
Okay, yeah. I gotcha. Right. To my question, mm-hmm. Do you think there's a path for Deshaun Watson to be with the Saints as the heir apparent to Drew Brees?
That's an interesting question. Let me tell you where I think Deshaun Watson makes the most sense. Should Deshaun Watson go to the Saints? Yeah, the Saints would be thrilled to have Deshaun Watson. Would Miami like to trade Tua for Watson? Yeah, of course. They'd be thrilled to have Deshaun Watson. The Chiefs like their guy better than Watson because Mahomes is better. The Packers might like Rodgers better than Watson now, but they take Watson because he's so much a dozen years younger, right? Maybe the Chargers might say, we like Justin Herbert. We want to stay with this. He's on his rookie deal, and he's really, really good, and he's going to get better. Maybe the Bills might say, we like Josh Allen. He's comparable, and he's our guy. Okay. You know, I get that. But most teams want Deshaun Watson badly. You know where he should go? I'm going to bring this up on First Take tomorrow. Here's the sneak preview. Deshaun Watson should go to the Chicago Bears. And the reason he should go to the Chicago Bears, from the Bears' point of view, they get to redo the draft where they skipped Watson and took Trubisky. And Trubisky's played admirably recently, but he's never going to be Deshaun Watson. He just not he doesn't have it in him. Trubisky is fast. He's not consistently accurate down the field. Watson diagnoses defenses more quickly, delivers the ball more accurately down the field. He's just better. And he galvanizes the team. He leads the team. So from that point of view, the Bears would be lucky to be able to redo that draft, essentially, and bring in Deshaun Watson. But the Bears also are one of the most storied franchises in the history of American team sports with the most rabid fan base. And they usually stink, and they've never had a great quarterback in my lifetime. Even when they won the Super Bowl, McMahon was not a great quarterback. They never get it right at quarterback. When Jay Cutler's the guy you point to, oh, we had Jay Cutler, you know it's a bad situation. Deshaun Watson would be the first great quarterback that the Bears have ever had in the Super Bowl era. That's it, the first one. But think of what that means. That's from the Bears' point of view. The Bears are loaded on defense. And they have some weapons on offense, in fact. If they got Deshaun Watson, they need to pick up an offensive lineman or two. And they're good to go. They're a Super Bowl contender, for real. They could win one. And no city is more starved for a Super Bowl than the Bears, because Chicago is a football town. At the height of Michael Jordan's popularity, in the middle of one of his three-peats, Saturday Night Live did a skit, you know, the Bears, and they were talking about how Jordan versus Ditka would tear the universe apart. I remember this as a kid thinking, what has Ditka done? They carried Buddy Ryan off the field when they won that Super Bowl because Ditka was, like, considered the worst head coach to ever win a Super Bowl. And everyone knew it was a defensive coordinator. What is Ditka? Ditka's being compared to Michael Jordan? But that's how crazy about football the Bears were. And the 85 Bears were the greatest football team ever, according to most. At least that's what you say, right? Like the 27 Yankees once upon a time, the 85 Bears, synonymous with, you know, greatness in football. But they haven't been good in a long, long time. From Deshaun Watson's point of view, can you imagine if you bring a Super Bowl championship to the Chicago Bears, the legend of Deshaun Watson? You will be such a big deal in the landscape of American team sports. And don't forget, Dabo Swinney called Deshaun Watson, it was Dabo, wasn't it, who called Deshaun Watson the Michael Jordan of football? Where'd Jordan play? In Chicago. Can you imagine Deshaun Watson winning a Super Bowl in Chicago, which I think is actually likely if he wound up there, where he would stand in the American sports landscape? I know it's cold there, you know, like you might prefer to live in Miami for the weather, but damn. Did Belichick just make a major stand? Is that what he did by turning down the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Max, the podcast. You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
Bill Belichick was offered the Presidential Medal of Freedom, a medal that Donald Trump has given out to people who deserve condemnation, not freedom, not a medal of freedom, deserve to be censured. Belichick, for a minute, didn't say whether he was going to take it or not. I just assumed he was going to take it, and I thought, boy, this is going to stain Belichick's legacy. You can't accept that from a president who just incited an insurrection in the Capitol, where five people died, including a police officer who was bludgeoned to death. But he decided not to take it, in fact. Here's the quote from Belichick. Recently, I was offered the opportunity to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which I was flattered by out of respect for what the honor represents and admiration for prior recipients. Nothing wrong with that statement so far. It's perfectly good. Here's my issue. Ready? Quote, subsequently, the tragic events of last week occurred, and the decision has been made not to move forward with the award. It's very good that Belichick, end quote, it's very good that Belichick didn't take the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Trump. But this is a zero-sum game here. This is either Belichick does the right thing or he does the very wrong thing. So how much credit does Belichick deserve? Well, look, I think there are times where, you know, this is sports, right? The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. I think there are times where it is zero sum. Either you're the hero or the villain. And here Belichick can play hero. However, the decision has been made not to move forward with the award. Why did he put it in a passive voice? Why did Belichick, the decision has been made. Belichick should own it and say, I have decided. The only reason to say the decision has been made that I can think of, two of them. One, you don't want to tick off Trump supporters. Sorry. If you still support, in spite of what just happened, it's okay to, it's all right. Those people can be offended. You're supporting insurrection. And two, he doesn't want to offend Trump personally. Now, believe it or not, the personal part I understand more. Trump reportedly used to call Belichick and his wife when Belichick's wife was going through cancer treatments. And I am very sympathetic to people who would say the following. Look, this person that you don't like, that has done bad things, even criminal things, let's say, for example, they've always been good to me, and I feel personal loyalty to them. I get that argument. That's the way human beings are wired. But at a certain point, if behavior crosses the line of any kind of decency and goes to treachery and treason and sedition, then I think Belichick shouldn't be so worried about offending Trump or people who would support the insurrection. In other words, traitors, and instead say, I have decided not to accept this award from Donald Trump. Look, at the end of the day, I commend someone who does the right thing. And Belichick here has done the right thing. I just want to temper the enthusiasm with which some people are mentioning this with what I just said. Check us out tomorrow, Max Kellerman Show.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.